Welcome to EHS On Tap. I'm your host, Jay Kumar, Editor-in-Chief of EHS Daily Advisor. This week, I talked to Jill James, Chief Safety Officer at HSI, about common misconceptions regarding safety training. This episode is sponsored by HSI as part of Safety Training Week. And now, on to the interview.
I'm joined today by Jill James, Chief Safety Officer at HSI. Welcome, Jill.
Thanks, Jay. It's really good to be back again.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. For folks who haven't heard you on the show, I was wondering if you could just tell me a little bit about yourself and tell me about your podcast, too.
Sure. So my name is Jill. I'm Chief Safety Officer at HSI. And you'll hear a little bit about some of the things we're doing at HSI, I think, as we talk today. This is my 30th year in my career of EHS. Started out with OSHA as an investigator, and we'll talk a little bit about that today, too, and what I learned from there. My roles and responsibilities at HSI have really been to help our company understand who is an EHS professional, what makes us tick, what are we interested in, what challenges do we face day to day, and then how can HSI as a company help solve for those problems. And yes, you're right. I do host a podcast. It's called The Accidental Safety Pro. We are recording in the month of May 2024, which is also the 6th year anniversary of the podcast that I host, which is an opportunity for EHS professionals to share their journey, share their story about how it is they accidentally found this profession, which is a pun for sure. So it's been a great pleasure to capture their stories over all these years.
Well, congrats on 6 years. It's a great name for a podcast, because I was just talking to somebody else yesterday, and you know, there aren't too many people who intentionally go into safety as a career. Like they really do accidentally fall into it. So it's kind of perfect, the name of your show.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. It was the first question a marketing director asked me 6 years ago. Well, what are we going to call this? We have to have a name. And I said, I don't know. The first question I always ask when I meet someone new in my field is, how did you find your way here? Because it's always a winding path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned, obviously, that you worked at OSHA previously. Yeah. And I wanted to get some of your, because we're going to talk about safety training today, but I wanted to get some of your take on common misconceptions and blind spots that safety professionals have about safety training. And I'm sure you've seen plenty of them over the years, in your experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. So as an investigator, part of my job, every single inspection, regardless of the probable cause or reason that I was doing the inspection, was to review and assess the employer's safety training and what they had provided for their employees, and if that training aligned with the type of hazards the employees had exposure to, and of course, what's required under the law. And so I guess, you know, one of the unfortunate things that I saw really often was that some employers believe that showing an employee a written policy and having them sign off, and I'm doing that in air quotes, constitutes training. And so the OSHA regulations, for anyone who's ever dug into them, knows that there are many pieces and parts of individual laws. So let's take the personal protective equipment standard on the federal level as an example. There's a section of that law that talks about training, and that training must be done, and then it outlines what has to be covered in the training. And then there's another portion of that law, among other portions as well, that says the employer has to have a written assessment, meaning they took the time to figure out what type of personal protective equipment is necessary for that place of employment, what sort of hazards there are, and what they would assign to employees. And And many of the OSHA laws are like that. So there's a training requirement and then some kind of written documentation requirement, whether it's a program or a policy or an SOP or an assessment, as the case of PPE. Sometimes employers think that, okay, if we just have this written document, we have this program and we show it to people, that constitutes training, and that's not the case. So that would be a big misconception that I saw pretty often. The other one is understanding that when an employer is in a state that is operating under a state OSHA program, meaning the state has jurisdiction for inspections over those places of employment, employers don't sometimes understand that they must comply with state OSHA training requirements, if there are any, as well as federal OSHA. And so it's looking at both. So I spend a lot of my time at HSI helping employers understand that. We go to the federal OSHA webpage pretty often. We go to the search bar and we type in state plan state, and a map of the United States shows up, and it tells you if the state you're operating in has a state OSHA program. And then you can click on your state if that's the case. It'll take you to a summary for your state OSHA program, and it'll give you a list of unique standards that are over and above the federal government. And then you can see right there what the differences are. And then you'd look at that list of topics and dig a little bit further to find out, is there a training requirement for that particular topic, or is it more of a performance-based standard, like, you know, do this, not that, or have something inspected this way, those kind of things.
And sort of in line with sort of our training discussion, you've come up with an interesting tool at HSI that folks can use to assess their safety training. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about it.
Right. And so if anyone has ever dug into the OSHA standards, the OSHA laws, and tried to figure out of all of the laws, which ones require training, it's a little bit daunting. And so over the last number of months, a colleague of mine and I, her name is Christy, we read every single OSHA regulation for general industry 1910, construction 1926, and the maritime laws and the agriculture laws. And we searched and sifted by literally going line by line and doing a control search button and typing in the word train, training, teach, educate, any key words like that, and then partnering those with the words shall or should. Shall, in the words of OSHA, means you must do it. Should means it's a good idea. And then we took what we found, put it on a spreadsheet, captured the regulation, and then we compared it with another document that OSHA has on the federal website that's under their section on training. They have a 270-page PDF that's titled Training Requirements in OSHA Standards, where they've pulled out the standards that require training as well, except that document doesn't get updated as often as the actual standards. So we did a side-by-side comparison there to make sure that we weren't missing anything. And most of the time, a few times we found that the PDF was actually missing some things. So that was our check and balance. And then we recorded all of those instances. And then with our webmaster at HSI, we created what we call the OSHA Safety Training Assessment. So we, for each of those regulations where it says must do training, shall do training, we wrote a question about that particular standard. And when I say question, I mean someone can pull up to our assessment, answer a series of questions that are mapped to that regulation. And the question that's asked is written in such a way that you don't have to be a seasoned EHS professional to know what it means. It means that maybe if you're the HR person, you're going to be able to answer the question. Or maybe if you're just starting out, you'll be able to answer the questions. You'll know what the core of that question is. And then when you work your way through this assessment, the final report comes out that says, okay, you answered yes for these particular topics, meaning you need to provide training for your employees on that. It lists the regulation, and it also lists the recommended frequency of training if that was listed in the OSHA regulations. So we captured that information as well, as well as recommendations on which online courses to fulfill those requirements you can take from HSI. And the great piece of it is that one, it's free. It's on our website. We really wanted it to be something that enables EHS professionals to assess their work environments. You can take it as many times as you want. There's the landing page where you're filling out the information about yourself, asks you to list which location you're assessing for. So let's say you're the EHS pro and you're like, I want to assess my location in Michigan at this particular building and structure. You can do that. Then you can take it again for a different location. Or if you wanted to do it for like a specific department, like just your maintenance department, you could take it and in your mind's eye, you're holding those employees in your mind and what their exposures are as you're taking it. And then you get an email copy of the report for yourself every time you take it. And then that becomes your proof, your due diligence. Maybe if you're answering to a leader who says, do we really have to do this? Or how do you know if we have to do this? Or are you sure we have to do this? You're able to have that document as proof.
Yeah, that's excellent. And you've had a bunch of people actually take the assessment and gotten some feedback, correct?
Yeah, we have. I've worked specifically with some of our customers who have taken it since we launched it, and it was just launched weeks ago, who said, they're using it as like their gap analysis. Like maybe it's been a while since they've really thought about, maybe some things have changed here. We're going to take this assessment. So I've talked with customers who have said, I was missing a few things, or I didn't know that, or I worked with a customer of ours a few weeks ago, who said I had my supervisor at a particular location take it for me. So people are assigning it out as well, and wow, we were missing like, a dozen things or six things here, just things they didn't know about, because there are so many regulations, and I certainly don't have them all memorized, even 30 years into it. And so it's just, it's just a nice tool for anyone, whether you're starting out or whether you've been doing this as long as I have. And we're pretty proud of the fact that we have this and we're able to offer it to anyone free on our website. It's right
And
on
it's
the
not like,
land. It's on the landing page.
yeah, it's HSI.com. It's right there. excuse me. So it's just, obviously it's not like the government's making it, easy to track all this stuff down too. You guys had to put so much work into it, just to put this together. What is it kind of, were you surprised at how many people were missing things, or was that kind of what you expected to find when you've heard back from folks?
Not surprising. Not surprising, just because there's so many. There's just so many to know. And so, I guess the thing that surprised my colleague Christy and I more was that no one has done this before. Like we searched. We're like, has anyone ever developed a tool like this before? OSHA doesn't have one. And we weren't able to find anything in the Googleverse, and maybe someone's done it, but we haven't been able to find it. And so this is, this is great, and we'll keep it up to date as OSHA changes things. You and I both know they don't change things very often, but when federal OSHA, finalizes the heat standard, we'll update that. And then we also did add in some best practice things as well. Things that we hear about real often with customers, or as an example, California just recently passed their workplace violence prevention standard. And so workplace violence is one of the questions on our assessment. And of course, it's noted that it's not mandatory with federal OSHA yet. But we put it in there because it's definitely top of mind for many employers to be doing training on workplace violence prevention with their employees. So that's an example of something that's in there.
Yeah, certainly, you know, even if you're not required, that's a good thing to have as a plan, you know what to do in those situations.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, for sure. And, you know, the other thing, Jay, that we get asked really often about, and I've done webinars on this as well, is how often do I have to repeat training just to be compliant? And that's a little bit tricky because each regulation is written a little bit differently. And so when we wrote the assessment, we took note of what each law said, and then we put that in there. So for example, some regulations, not all, some regulations say training has to be repeated annually. One regulation, the forklift operator, says every 3 years. It's really ambiguous and doesn't say at all, which means you get to decide as the employer. And then there's all of these if-then statements in the regulations. So sometimes a regulation will say when the responsibilities for the worker change, or when there's a new hazard or a risk or some new equipment has been introduced, or maybe there's been a change in the duties for that employee, or we have some kind of proof that the worker's knowledge, you know, the training that they had didn't essentially stick, and so you have to retrain. Those kind of things. And that's all captured in the assessment as well. And that's a little bit tricky for people to like, oh man, I have to remember that about this particular regulation.
Right. Another challenge with training is, you know, there's definitely a struggle to keep workers, you know, sticking around at your company. You know, either they're, you know, leaving the business or retiring, or, you know, if they're younger, they might just, you know, stick around for like a year or two and then find something else. So, you know, what do you tell folks when it's in, you know, sort of about maintaining that institutional knowledge from folks who've been around for a while, and then, you know, training new folks who may not be there for very long?
Right. And so that is the key conundrum. And I think about, you know, younger generations of workers have an expectation to have knowledge. You know, the younger generations have had knowledge at their fingertips for their entire lives. And so their expectation is that they are going to get information, they are going to get training, and it's going to be frequent. And that's a competitive edge for employers who can do that, to be able to keep things top of mind and fresh, and doing things like compliance training, like we're talking about, which is necessary and required, but also the micro learning things, those things that come day to day, to be able to engage and keep your workforce so they're not, you know, leaving for somewhere else. And then how do you engage your older workforce to be able to work with your younger workers in terms of their institutional knowledge, when you have good employees who can really mentor and talk about, you know, how can you engage with them in terms of how can you come alongside your younger workers to pass on some of that institutional knowledge, not the bad stuff, not the here's a shortcut.
Yeah,
but here, I've done this. This has happened to me, and this is why this is important, kind of things. And I think it's a nice way to bridge generations at the workplace, being able to find those mentors and mentees.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, is it just setting up that sort of mentor relationship, you know, and kind of talking to those older workers and saying, hey, you know, we know that, you know, we've got younger folks here, and, you know, it's might be difficult to communicate sometimes, but, you know, you have all this, you know, vast information that you've amassed over the last 20, 30 years. And, you know, we need you to share that with these folks. So, giving them a little more, you know, I guess, weight in terms of, you know, you've got a lot to offer here. You know, please share it.
Yeah, particularly with the trades. You know, particularly with the trades, we do at HSI a lot of training with the trades as well. not just health and safety training, but actual, you know, functional training for their particular disciplines, whether it's, you know, electricians or plumbers or carpenters, whatever the trades are, we do a lot of training with them as well. And that's exactly what we're finding. These trades workers are critical to our infrastructure and absolutely institutional knowledge that needs to be passed down, and then upskilling that next generation that are going to enable all of us to keep the lights on and the water flowing, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, you mentioned microlearning and sort of new methods of training, I guess newer generations. Have you seen those being effective, you know, in the last little while? Are there things that are more effective than others?
You know, for sure, we certainly see customers who are asking for just-in-time training, and some employers have asked and do where they're posting like a QR code in a particular area or near a machine for that just-in-time refresher, so that someone can use a device, use a smartphone or a tablet to bring up that training just in time, or checklists. You know, like, before I do this, here's the checklist I need to go through, and they're bringing it up through a QR code right at the work location. And so it's in their hands immediately, or maybe it's an inspection list that they're able to use. And so we have customers who are doing that as well, keeping things right there and immediately accessible to people. So there aren't any, you know, excuses or delays to access to information, which is the powerful thing is access.
What are the positives and negatives of using AI in putting together a training?
We just recently had a customer advisory board at HSI. We met just a month ago, where nearly a dozen EHS professionals from around the world came together to talk with us. And one of them talked about AI and how dangerous that piece was in terms of it hasn't matured enough to be able to figure out all of the ins and outs of particular pieces and parts of compliance or hazards or deconstructing things. So, for example, as Christy and I were working through just building the OSHA safety training assessment I was talking about, one day we went, maybe we should be asking AI if they can do this for us. So we're typing in all these different, you know, questions to try to get at, you know, what training does OSHA require? And of course it populated a few things, but it was like, you know, a list of 10, not 95, you know?
Well, and so the other thing too is you've really got to review it, right? I mean, because AI is just learning what's being put into it or what it's finding. So it might, if it finds something wrong and gives that to you as a solution, you can't just blindly give that to other people. You got to review it and make sure it's actually, you know, saying what you want it to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you still need an SME, a subject matter expert, to be able to review things. You know, I mean, it's kind of in some situations, people have often thought, well, I'll just go to YouTube and I'll search confined space entry training. Well, you might find something decent on YouTube, but you need a subject matter expert to find, like, is this right? Did this cover all the elements? I mean, you know,
you can't completely automate, like, you know, the entire departments. You know, you've got to have somebody reviewing this stuff and making sure that it passes muster.
Right. So I guess we still need humans right now.
At least for now, yeah. We'll see how it goes down the road. I mean, obviously, do you feel that we're making strides in terms of, you know, training employees? You feel like it's getting better, you know, just with all these tools and with what we've learned over the years?
Certainly. I mean, we absolutely have more options for training than we ever have. And, you know, in my profession, many of us, you know, acknowledge and kind of laugh about the fact that we're often, you know, a century or two behind our counterparts and other parts of our organization. You know, we laugh about oh, we're still using VHS tapes for something where,
Or
yeah, I mean, some
wow.
literally are. And then, you partner that with, we're having our employees clock in with optical scanners.
Right.
These two things do not align. And so that's the big laugh. And with technology, we are certainly blasting our profession right into the current century where we can compete alongside the rest of our counterparts in other parts of an organization, and being able to offer training in multiple modalities at multiple frequencies. It's not just getting everyone together in a room for a lecture or pressing play on that VHS. It's, different learning modalities of interactive online training or video training or micro learning or reading articles or following checklists and having it be in people's hands in real time. And, we haven't had opportunities for that until sort of recently in our profession.
Well, yeah, it's exciting to see, the new developments, and I'm sure things are only going to get better as we sort of learn more. So, Jill, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge.
You're welcome, Jay. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Sure thing. And the assessment tool, you can if you go to hsi.com, it's right there at the top. You can click on Take Assessment, and it'll take you right to it and see how you're doing.
That's right. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you.
That wraps up episode 207 of EHS on Tap. Thanks again to HSI for sponsoring the episode. You can find more information about the show and listen to on-demand episodes at ehsdailyadvisor.blr.com. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get podcasts. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join me next time.